ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। I'm sorry, is text 31 on the board? 33 and 34. Okay, text 33-34. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 18. Diti vows to kill King Indra. Text 33 and 34. Start at 31. That's what I thought. But 33 is on the board. Okay, so I'll read from 31. Okay. Evam sushushitas tata bhagavan kashyapastriya prahasya paramaprito ditim aha binandyacha. O my dear one, the most powerful sage Kashyapa, being extremely pleased by the mild behavior of his wife Diti, smiled and spoke to her as follows. Sri Kashyapa uvacha, varam varya vamoru pritaste ham anindite. Striya bartari suprite ka kama iha chagamaha. Kashyapa Muni said, O beautiful woman, O irreproachable lady, since I am very much pleased by your behavior, you may ask me for any benediction you want. If a husband is pleased, what desires are difficult for his wife to obtain, either in this world or in the next? Can someone douse that? Oh, my dear, has been doused already. Okay, text. Is text 33 on the board or both? Okay, we'll read text 33. Pati eva hi narinam daivatam paramam smitam manasaha sarvabhutanam vasudeva shriya patihi. Patereva hinari nam daivatam padamam smritam manasak sarvabhutanam vasudevak shriyak patihi. Patereva hinari nam daivatam padamam smritam manasak sarvabhutanam vasudevak shriyak patihi. Patarevahi nari nam daivatam padamam smitam manasak sarvabhutanam vasudevak shriyak patihi. Ladies? Anyone else? Ladies? Patireva hinari nam daivatam padamam smitam Asak sarva bhutanam. Vasudeva kshiyat patihi. Patihi, the husband. Eva, indeed. He, certainly. Nadinam, of women. Daivatam, demigod. Paramam, supreme. Smritam, is considered. Manasaha, situated in the heart. Sarvabhutanam, of all living entities. Vasudevaha, Vasudev. Shriyaha, of the goddess of fortune. Patihi, the husband. So there's another verse here. I'll just read the translation for both. A husband is the supreme demigod for a woman. The supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudev, the husband of the goddess of fortune, is situated in everyone's heart and is worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by food of workers. Similarly, a husband represents the Lord as the object of worship for a woman. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, 9:23, Ye pyanya devata bhakta yajante shraddhayanvita te pi mame vakonteya yajant avidhi purvakam. Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone, but it is offered without true understanding. The demigods are various assistants who act like the hands and legs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is not in direct touch with the Supreme Lord and cannot conceive of the exalted position of the Lord is sometimes advised to worship the demigods as various parts of the Lord. If women, who are usually very much attached to their husbands, worship their husbands as representatives of Vasudev, the women benefit, just as Ajamil benefited by calling for Narayan, his son. Ajamil was concerned with his son, but because of his attachment to the name of Narayan, he attained salvation simply by chanting that name. In India, a husband is still called Pati Guru, the husband spiritual master. If husband and wife are attached to one another for advancement in Krishna consciousness, their relationship of cooperation is very effective for such advancement. Although the names of Indra and Agni are sometimes uttered in the Vedic mantras, Indraya Swaha, Agnihe Swaha, the Vedic sacrifices are actually performed for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. As long as one is very much attached to material sense gratification, the worship of the demigods or worship of one's husband is recommended. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmiditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So here we have a demonstration of extreme attachment. I don't know if there's any other stronger attachment in this world than a mother for the children. And in the case of Diti and her sons Aranyaksha and Aranyakashipu, they happen to be the foremost of demons. But that didn't matter to her. She knew that... What's it? Like this? She was overwhelmed with grief because Vasudev had... Krishna had killed Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu in two different incarnations as Lord Varaha, whose appearance we just celebrated, and Lord Nrisimhadev. So she saw Indra as the representative of Vasudev. And she felt that he was his ally in this deed. And so she wanted to take out her revenge on Indra. And so she prayed, she wanted to have a son who could kill Indra. And therefore she started to serve her husband, Kashyapa, with all, it says, with service, love, humility, and control, Words spoken very sweetly to satisfy her husband, and with smiles and glances, Didi attracted his mind and brought it under her control. So this is part of the power of the material energy, is that womanly wiles on the material side very powerful in attracting the mind of the male, and especially here in this case, it's her exalted husband, Kashyapa. Kashyapa is the father of both the demigods line and the demons line. Aditi and Diti are both his wives. So here she's attracting him, and he's responding. He was extremely pleased, and he's praising her. But she will not get a son who will kill Indra. So you will see how Kashyapa is lamenting when he hears her request. So though in this purport, Prabhupada first talks about the position of the demigods. Because the verse that we just read, the main verse we chanted, says that the husband is the demigod for a woman. Now, this is, of course, in the ideal Vedic culture. We don't see that today. Actually, in America, marriage, I think it's back to fewer than half of people who used to be married in marriageable age are now getting married. As Prabhupada said, marriage is practically imagination in modern society. That's a direct quote. And he was, you know, it's becoming like that. Certainly, any kind of marriage in which the husband is pious or a devotee, and the lady serves him, and both get a credit, a devotional credit, because they serve Krishna together, that is really an imagination. Unfortunately, it's sometimes an imagination, even in our own society, our Hare Krishna society. But that was the ideal that Prabhupada set up. That was what he hoped that his householders would show, an example of that. And there are many who do. But it's very difficult in this age because of our conditioning, because of the environment, because there's no support system. You know, it's not like everybody's doing that. It's a very unusual thing to have a marriage in which man and wife live peacefully for the sake of service to Krishna, self-control, all of these different things. That's the ideal. And when that takes place, the ideal is that the wife will serve the husband will protect the wife, and both will gradually advance in devotional service. So that's why Prabhupada says the husband, in the Bhagavatam verse, the husband is the supreme demigod for the woman. The supreme personality of God, Advasudev, he's the husband of the goddess of fortune, and he's worshipped through the various names and forms of the demigods by fruit of workers. So this is, the understanding here is that the demigods are all part of the universal form. They're part of Krishna's universal form. They are his servants, his agents, in so many different things. Indra, for the control, he's the god of the heavens, he controls the weather. Surya controls the sun, we have the god of the air, the water. All of these different gods are not independently powerful. Whatever they benedictions they can give, whatever powers they have, are all bestowed upon them by Krishna, by Vasudeva. But people, when they are overwhelmed with material desire, they're not looking for renunciation. They know that Krishna, his business is not to simply fulfill your material desires so that you become more conditioned. But he'll give you something of what you want, but in such a way that it will lead to renunciation. So Krishna says, Kamaistaista Ritta Gyanapapadante Anyadevita. When people's minds are overwhelmed by different material desires and their intelligence and their knowledge is stolen away, then they worship different demigods for material benefits according to their own natures. And whatever god or goddess you want to worship, Krishna will make your faith strong in that god. Yo yo yayam tanam bhakta shadayajita michati tasita sachalam shuddham tamaiva vadadhamyaham. It's all a question of faith. And if you really want to worship Ganesh for a prosperous business, Then Krishna will give you the faith that this is the most important thing you should do, worship Ganesh. And you'll get some benedictions if you do the worship properly. Satya shuddhya yuktas tasya radhanamiyate labhate chatat kaman mayavavahitanitan. With that faith, you worship the demigod, you get some benedictions, but actually they're coming from me. But people forget that. They forget Krishna's all-powerful hand behind the world and behind these demigods' benedictions. And so Krishna's, one of his verdicts here, in this chapter 7 of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, antavattu palam tesham tadva valti apamedasam. That all of these fruits that you can get from the demigods, they can't give you liberation. They can't give you prema bhakti. And they can't take you out of this material world and go back to the spiritual world. So all of these benedictions, whether it is prosperity, you worship Indra, the rains come at the right time, or strong body. Indras also give you a very strong body for good sex life. That's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Surya for good health, Saraswati for learning, so many. Ganesh for prosperity. They're temporary. They're all temporary. Antavattu palam tesham. And therefore, those who worship the gods for these temporary benedictions are not very intelligent. Because you worship the gods, you go to the gods. But their worlds are temporary. You'll eventually come back down from there, and you'll be back where you started from. Birth, death, old age, and disease. So, Devan Devi, Mudbhakta Yantimam. But those who are my devotees, who worship me solely and rely on me to give them what they need in this world, they come to me. And what's the advantage of coming to Krishna? You don't come back again. And you're reinstated in your original position for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. So this lamentation of Diti, this is a sign of very strong attachment. And when let's just think of the central mood here, is that she has an uncontrollable anger, the desire for revenge in her heart. And it's leading her to perform an activity which is inauspicious. That's a general principle here. In fact, you may remember the whole birth of Hiranyakashipu came about because Diti was uncontrolled and she induced Kashyapa to have sex at the wrong time of day. You know, inauspicious time. So here, she's trying to induce him to do something that's also, again, inauspicious. This is why you have Daichas. There's this dynasty of demons coming down from Diti. So this principle of forgiveness is extremely important in Krishna consciousness. I read that someone sent me a little quote from the Mahabharata recently. Very nice. That anger, I forget who says this, that anger is like holding a burning cinder in your hand that you're trying to throw at somebody. But instead it's burning yourself. You're burning your own hand. So when you nourish, if you will, grievances or grudges at other people, especially devotees, then that serves to constrict your heart and to pull up your creeper of devotion. Therefore, one of the central principles of devotional service is forgiveness, tolerance, and understanding, well, why did these things happen? You know, Diti could see, well, you know, they're demons, right? It was my fault that they took birth. That she knows, right? But in spite of all that, the attachment is to these are her sons. You know, my sons. Indra conspired to kill my sons. So there's no forgiveness there. There's a plan here to somehow get revenge. So we as devotees need to embrace that principle of tolerance and forgiveness, because this is a rough world we're in. Even in the society of devotees, you'll find devotees of different levels. Some are coming to devotional service with a background of abuse of different kinds, And therefore, the mind may be easy to anger or whatever. There's all kinds of people who, fortunate people who come to Krishna consciousness with different backgrounds. And so in the course of our devotional career, we may find that we feel that we've been unjustly disciplined or whatever may happen. So the process of devotional service itself, headed by the chanting of the holy name, enables us to open the heart and to let things go and to proceed in our devotional service without this sense of grievance and the desire for revenge. Because it's sure and certain that this will constrict our devotional creeper and obstruct our advancement. And so we have so many instructions, you know, titikshava, karunika, sudadaksarvadehina. One of the first quality of a sadhu is tolerance. And this sense of, I think, chanti, of forgiveness. It's also tolerance, but it's especially emphasizing tolerating interpersonal slights that one may have, you see, is part of it. So this position of the wife and the husband, of course, Srila Prabhupada talked about this, and there's certain principles in a Vaishnav marriage. The husband should be the leader, the wife should serve, but they both are doing so for the advancement of devotional service. And we always like to point out, you know, how much Srila Prabhupada was appreciative of his household of disciples when they really embraced this mood of preaching, of sacrifice. The ideal, perhaps, early on, of course, were those three couples who went to London and England in general to spread Krishna consciousness. You know, they were completely surrendered to Srila Prabhupada, to the mission. And they did such wonderful service. And over the years, there have been many others who have really been leaders of this movement. There's no question about it. And at the same time, we find that maintaining the proper respect for women in our movement is sometimes something that we've been lacking. And this has to be understood as well. If you read the accounts of some of the exalted Vaishnavis in this Srimad Bhagavatam, you see how much their husbands and others honored them, whether it's Draupadi, Gandhari, Kunti, many others. They received the highest respect, and they were extremely advanced. Srila Prabhupada loved those prayers of Queen Kunti, you know, and she was, you know, the ideal mother working to protect her children, you know. She's exalted. And yet at the end there, she also prayed. You know, when Krishna's about to leave, she prays, please cut off my attachment to my sons, to the Pandavas and the dynasty in general. Because when the time comes, that attachment, even that attachment has to be given up. It's very difficult. So she says, Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi, let me please cut off this very strong attachment, like ropes. To my children, and Tvayime Anandivishaya, let my mind be drawn only unto you, and my love be drawn to you. So this is the ideal. We have to work with whatever situation we're in, and Grihastha Ashram is one of the arrangements Krishna has made for advancement, because the main attachment, the main binding force in this world is sex desire. And brahmachari ashram is very exalted, but it's not possible for everybody. So that doesn't mean that you can't be a devotee. You know, we see so many of Lord Chaitanya's disciples, his followers, they were exalted householders. And the women, they were also part of Lord Chaitanya's followers. Yes, when he took sannyas, they offered from a distance, but they were just as advanced as their husbands, and they were serving. You know, I think of Raghava Jali. It was a Raghava Pandit whose wife was making all of these sweets and packing them up very nicely. And he appreciated him so nicely for that. And someone pointed out, we just had Nityananda's appearance day 2 days ago, how amazing life of Lord Nityananda. I mean, when he was in Navadvipa, I was reading up on his life in the Chaitanya Bhagavad. He was a sannyasi. He broke his danda. It's mentioned there. He broke his danda and discarded it. He also broke Lord Chaitanya's danda later as his danda-breaking pastimes. But that means he was in the role of sannyasi. And so after all of that, of course he was avadut, he is special. But still, it was, you know, he was single. And then at a certain point, Lord Chaitanya told him to get married. And he did. After being a sannyasi. And he had Janava and Vasudha were his two exalted wives. And he had, how many sons did he have? At least one son from that. And Janava, then when he left, she became the head of the whole sampradaya. And she was the one who was in charge of, you know, the cooking and the serving and this Ketui festival, which we'll maybe read about in a little bit because it's Narottam Das's appearance day. And she was recognized as the head of the whole sampradaya. So the ladies, the devotional ladies, occupy an exalted place in the Gaudiya Vaishnava sampradaya. But in this Grihastha ashram, there are certain roles that the men and the women are meant to play for the ultimate advancement of both parties and all parties toward the going back to Godhead. So I wanted to leave a little time to read about Narottam Das Thakur. I've got it. If anyone has any questions on this pastime, I'm a little bit spaced out. Believe me, I've just driven all the way back to San Diego and back to L.A. starting at 3 in the morning because I forgot something. I'm going to India today with Bhrigu Patipabhu. So a lot of driving, but a lot of chanting too. Yeah, Prabhu?
Interesting, but I just thought it's kind of interesting that, you know, she had this desire to kill Indra, although the person who actually killed her sons was Lord Vishnu. But I guess it wasn't even an option in her mind to try to...
Well, I honestly, I didn't have much time to review this, but it appears that she considered... Let's see. Okay, just to help Indra. So he was part of the whole thing. Just to help Indra, this is text 23. Just to help Indra, Lord Vishnu killed the two brothers, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Because of their being killed, their mother Diti, overwhelmed with lamentation, contemplated as follows. Lord Indra, who is very much fond of sense gratification, has killed the two brothers. So she's considering that because of it was in his interest, that he was partly responsible. So she's, you know, it's just like if... that Indra somehow induced Vishnu to do it. So she's holding him responsible. Because as you say, she knows enough to know that Vishnu's not going to be killed. So her anger was directed toward Indra. Anyone else? Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned in your class the challenge that the society faces, the individuals of the society, in terms of the... there's the ideal standard of household life, and then there's the reality bears, which is not always the highest standard. And there's been difficulty that we've seen historically in that ashram. And so I was thinking that perhaps it would be just as there's emphasis on brahmachari training, and we know that probably the greater percentage will eventually become householders. Hopefully, there'll be a strong percentage that will remain brahmachari, but therefore it would seem that it would be a feasible idea to have grihastha training as well, because there's so many issues that one faces, the transition from brahmacharya to grihastha, whether it's male or female, and coming into that ashram, there's all these different variables, and people kind of basically just figure it out for themselves, and some make it and some don't. The greater percentage don't, unfortunately. So perhaps there should be consideration for some type of training in that regard.
You know, in this year, 2012, that idea has come up before. And there is a whole Grihastha ashram body of knowledge that's available. There's a ministry. Every time I go to the Festival of Inspiration, that's one of the, I've been able to go to that for the last 5-6 years. There are so many seminars, and one of those seminars is held by the Grihastha ashram, ministry or whatever it is. And they have all kinds of materials and training and things like that. And I'm sure there's something available online. the question is, how does it, you know, manifest in each center? You know, that's the difficulty. Yeah, but the information is there. The people are there doing it. I don't know who's in charge of it right now, but if one really wants to know, you know, even if one isn't a grahastha but is contemplating, this is the time to really get trained, as you mentioned. Then these resources are available, and maybe the best thing would be to emphasize it a little more, you know, and also to have invite those, you know, the people who are running that, who are, have representatives, to come to the different centers and to give a seminar, maybe a few days on the Hasta Ashram. That's a good idea. Archita Prabhu?
Yes, training is essential, but Prabhupada's take on this and any other ashram or service was be a devotee. For instance, in relation to marriage, there's that statement Prabhupada said that generally astrologers consulted to see if the boy and girl are compatible, but he said if the boy and girl are devotees, then they can overcome any astrological incompatibility. So the real point is become a devotee. You want good management, become a devotee. You want good marriages, become devotees. If you really become devotees, it overcomes all the problems. Otherwise, you're in a world that's full of problems. You're taking people from the general population that are full of problems, mental, physical, intellectual, problems on every strata, and then you throw them together. Of course you're going to have problems. So the real thing is train people to be devotees, and then whatever ashram or service or whatever they take up, they have a fighting chance. If they're not really devotees, it doesn't matter how much training you give them, they're not going to
Sure, that's part of the grahastha ashram training, hopefully. But that's certainly true. It's like we're trying to hold back the quote natural flow of the modes of nature, which we've been conditioned to just by living in the Kali Yuga. And the only process for that is obviously intense devotional service. Srila Prabhupada gave it to us. 16 rounds, morning program, you know, and following the principles of the Upadeshamrita. I mean, these are all for all the devotees. And if one does that, then he has a fighting chance of actually controlling the tendency toward materialistic activity that can be more prominent or more available, let's say, in grahastha ashram. And so, absolutely. I mean, we were here in the 70s, Archita, remember? And you know, we had a buildings full of householders. And it was just understood. Everybody came to the morning and the evening program. You know, just imagine the evening program. What did it start at? 6:30 kirtan here? With the place full. You remember Omkar, you were here? Yeah. And, you know, everyone was dancing and chanting. And then Gita class, everyone's sitting there. And ladies with babies, and they're sitting across the street. The radio's playing. They're also listening to the class. There was a certain unity and a certain, you know, understanding. That's just the way it was, because that's the way Prabhupada set it up. So the point is the process works. Hearing and chanting works. And the more that we do things together, the more we help each other be spiritually strong. If everyone is just on his own, you know, trying to, you know, work, it'll never work. You'll never be able to overwhelm, you know, stop it. So that's what the whole purpose of the society of Krishna consciousness, ISKCON society, to get together, you know, the Sangha. And the Sangha is the society. The Sangha is what happens when people get together in the society. Mukunda Dad Prabhu, let's hear from the Pandit. And I'm also going to ask you if you can tell us a few words about the Krishna Madarotsava, which I don't know anything about. I didn't do research yet.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Just to add a comment and a question. Tamal Harprabhu just did a seminar for the Grahastha Vision team in Dallas when I was there. So he's one person who does that sort of work in our society.
Tamahar.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
And then the question is that in the previous text, Kashyapa addresses his wife as anindita, irreproachable.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just wondering if you can comment on why he said that, because it seems as if she's acting in a most abominable way.
All right. What is the word that we get with irreproachable?
Anindita. In the previous text.
Yeah, I'm looking at where it's text 32, right?
That's right. Anindite, it's in the vocative.
Anindite, okay. Yeah, that means you can't be... No one can blaspheme you, right?
Right.
Because he's a little bewildered. Just like he was when he conceived Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. He's coming under control of his wife, and then he makes the big mistake of promising her anything she wants. You know? So I think that this is, it's almost do we have this in the Bhagavatam? Am I stepping out of line and saying it's, sarcastic? In other words, it's something that he's not being sarcastic, but, the Bhagavatam itself, she's anything but Anindita. She is reproachable in this regard, isn't it? Or is there some other deep meaning that I'm not getting here?
Well, I was thinking of what, for example, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says when we're trying to preach to someone, we flatter him a million times and then tell him that he's a nonsense. So his ultimate aim here, it seems, is to purify her by engaging her in this ritual that he's about to prescribe. So that's another way to look at it.
But it says later in text 38, upon hearing Didi's request, Kasyapa Muni was very much aggrieved. Alas, now I face the danger of the impious act of killing Indra. So it seems on the outside anyway, he didn't really expect her to ask for some abominable benediction. So I haven't read, be able to consult the commentaries on this. It would be interesting to see. But it seems like he's fallen under the spell, of her spell, as described, because of what she's, we're serving him with service, love, humility, and control. But then when the time comes to the benediction, it's like a thunderbolt. We're going to read a little bit about Narottam. Is it okay? Okay. I wanted to read this. This is from Mahanidhi Maharaj's book, the Samadhi's book. Appearing as the son of a king, Sri Narottam Das Thakur, Sri Thakur Mahasaya, showed all the bodily symptoms of a Mahapurush, an exalted divine person. Now, before we go on, this sometimes annoys me. Okay, do we have dates? Now, he didn't see Lord Chaitanya directly. So he, when it appeared, like the early part of the 16th century. I'm not sure of the exact date. But he came, got the association of Jiva Goswami and the others, so he was a little bit later. So he showed all the bodily symptoms of a Mahapurush, an exalted divine person. He had long arms, a deep navel, golden complexion, beautiful eyes shaped like lotus petals. In school he was a Shutidhar. He could memorize anything just hearing it once. Although he quickly mastered Sanskrit and the Vedas, he hankered to serve Krishna. He was a lifelong brahmachari. Now what I heard is that he had a Sanskrit teacher who was actually a disciple of, or a follower of Lord Chaitanya. He had been a witness of Lord Chaitanya. And he was always telling him about the glories of Lord Chaitanya and bhakti and Gaudiya Vaishnava. And this way he developed an obsession, really, of going to Vrindavan and giving everything up. By the mercy of the holy name Gaur Nithai, Narottam became detached, left his opulent family, and ran to Vrindavan. He ran off. He was a prince. He was going to inherit the kingdom. He took diksha from Sri Lokanath Goswami and shiksha in the Gaudiya philosophy from Jiva Goswami. So it wasn't easy to get diksha from Lokanath Goswami. You know the story. He had no other disciples and he wasn't wanting to take disciples. So for a whole year, Narottam did humble menial service. He would watch from a distance and Lokanath would answer the call of nature, and then Narottam would go and sweep it up and clean it up. And Lokanath didn't really notice for a while, but then eventually he saw this was happening, and finally he found out that Narottam was doing that. And for a whole year, and he gave him initiation. And it says shiksha, yes, he was trained as the next generation of preachers. The Goswamis were elderly, Jiva was a little younger, but still they were in Vrindavan. They weren't about to go around and preach out of Vrindavan. But they had, all these incredible books and knowledge. They were great scholars in devotional service. So they trained Narottam along with Srinivasacharya and Shamananda, Duki Krishna Das. Those were the three next generations who spread the movement. So when he arrived in Navadvipa Dham, all the devotees asked him about the health and activities of the Goswamis in Vrindavan. So this is after his training, he came back to Bengal. They were eager to hear the news from Vrindavan. After visiting all of Lord Gauranga's pastime places in Gauramandala, Narottam Das did the same in Sri Chaitra, that's Jagannath Puri. Then he went to see the devotees and Lord Chaitanya's pastime spots in Shantipur, Sri Kanda, Kantak, Nagar, Ekachakra, and Keturi Gram. In Keturi, Narottam arranged the famous Keturi Mahotsava. This was the first Gaur Purnima festival. This coming up. This was the first Gaur Purnima festival to honor the divine appearance day of Sri Krishna Chandra Mahaprabhu. During the festival, six deities were installed. Sri Gauranga Dev, Sri Vallabhikanta, Sri Brajmohan, Sri Krishna, Sri Radha Kanta, and Sri Radha Raman. With his sweet voice, Narottam Das began a wonderful kirtan. His chanting filled the heavens and brought down tears of prema from the eyes of the devotees, who were all sporting in the ocean of ecstasy. And this is a quote from the Bhakti Ratnakara. In the midst of their kirtan, the munificent Lord Chaitanya himself and all his personal associates appeared and joined in the Sankirtan. You have to understand, they were all disappeared. They had all gone, but now they appeared in this kirtan because of the ecstatic nature. Like a flash of lightning in the midst of a mass of beautiful blue clouds, Lord Chaitanya himself appeared in the crowd of devotees through a divine manifestation. And everybody saw him. It wasn't just one or two. In Keturi, Sri Narottam arranged the famous Keturi Mahotsava. I'm sorry, I just read that. With his sweet voice, Narottam began his wonderful... His chanting filled the heavens, Bhaktivedanta. At that time, this is still from the Bhaktivedanta, although Mahaprabhu had left this world years before, many different devotees saw Mahaprabhu in different ways. Those of Navadvipa Dham saw him more intimately as Nimai Chanda or Vishrambar, in his household, you know, with hair and all that. As they knew him in his youth, those devotees were attracted to Mahaprabhu in Sakya and Vatsalya Ras, friendship and parental Ras. The followers of the six Goswamis, who only knew Mahaprabhu as a sannyasi, related to him in the mood of Dasya Ras. And hundreds of devotees also worshipped Lord Chaitanya and in an Aishwarya mood of awe and reverence. This festival is considered a major achievement in Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Hundreds and hundreds of devotees were invited, including direct disciples of Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Acharya, disciples of all of them. At this time, many differences existed in the interpretation of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Acharya Rani, Janavi Devi, came from Kardaha with her entourage. Presiding over all the Vaishnavas, she resolved their diverse conclusions into one consistent Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Is this important or what? Why are we sitting here? This is all coming from this event. For the first time, the festival featured many kirtan styles which integrated the glorification of Lord Chaitanya with the glorification of Krishna and his pastimes. And because so many Vaishnavas were present at one place, it automatically made the Keturi festival extraordinary. It also acted as an important step toward unifying all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. You can imagine, you know, imagine a world, you know, with no internet, if you can. In other words, it's easy to see how, you know, at different places, devotees were emphasizing different things, and they weren't able to communicate with each other. So naturally, differences developed, and it would have been, it could have been a major problem for the, you know, Asampradaya, if they hadn't been resolved. So this was such an important event. Narottam Das wrote many devotional songs about the spiritual master, one of which we sing every morning, the Sri Guru Charana Padma, about the devotees, about devotional service, the six Goswamis, Gaur Nityananda and Radha Krishna. Although composed with sweet melodies in simple Bengali language, Narottam Das's songs give Shastric Siddhanta and devotional inspiration. Srila Prabhupada, you know, would say, even though they're in simple Bengali, they're as authoritative as the Vedas. Srila Prabhupada often sang these bhajans, considering them non-different from the Vedic Shastra. He quoted them in his Bhagavatam lectures. Prarthana and Prema Bhakti Chandrika are Narottam's most famous works. Let's see. And here's an excerpt from the Prema Bhakti Chandrika. Radha and Krishna, this is a quote, Radha and Krishna are my goal in life and death. And they are the masters of my breath. Performing my bhajan only for them, I rise and fall in the ocean of prema. There's a little poem here. It doesn't look like it, but it is. I pray that I can always maintain this conception within my heart as my highest ideal. Let me serve the lotus feet of Radha Govinda. Let my mind be filled with dedication to their divine forms that defeat the beauty of Cupid and Rati. With a straw between my teeth, I fall at their divine feet and present my humble appeal. O Kishore Kishori, O son of Nanda Maharaj, Shamasundar, and O daughter of King Vishwamanu, Sri Radha, you enchant even Hari, and your bodily complexion is the color of golden lotus. O Krishna, with a bodily color like an Indranila gem, your beauty mocks Cupid. O topmost dancers, Sri Radha and Krishna, please dance within my mind. O you whose beauty increases the charm of your dazzling ornaments, day and night, I only wish that I shall go on singing your glories in great ecstasy. Narottam Das serves Srimati Radhika as Champaka Manjari. His samadhi is in Radha Gokulananda's temple courtyard. Sri Narottam Das Thakur ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yes? What's up, Prabhu? What kind of that, Prabhu? Is it? Hybridized. It's mixed up.
Like in the old days, we joined together.
Oh, yeah?
In Brooklyn, yeah.
At the old Brooklyn?